Live from KCUR News, this is Casey Currents on Central Standard, reporting news and culture in Kansas City's diverse communities and beyond. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross. Got insurance? Beginning October 1st, you'll be able to shop for it in a marketplace created by the Federal Affordable Care Act. Today on Casey Currents, hear how getting the word out about the controversial plan is complicated in Missouri.
If I happen to think that some bureaucrat in Jefferson City is helping the federal government set up an exchange, I could sue them.
Plus, get your questions answered about the local insurance marketplaces in both Missouri and Kansas. And 21,000 Kansans have had their voter registrations put on hold. Who are they? And do they even care? And we meet a teenage punk band of brothers from St. Joseph who are getting some national attention. It's Casey Currents, Listen Up, just after this hour's news. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross. Welcome to Casey Currents. We use stories and sound to take you to neighborhoods around the region. And now we're live, so we can take your calls on some of the big issues in our community. More than 20,000 people in the state of Kansas have their voter registrations on hold. That means their votes won't count until they get the situation resolved. Now, according to an analysis by the Associated Press, about 80% of those stalled registrations happened this year at driver's license offices. And they seem to stem from a new law requiring people to show proof of citizenship when they register to vote. John Hanna is a political writer for the Associated Press. He's been examining state data on these suspended voter registrations. He's joining us over the phone from his office in the State House in Topeka. Welcome to Casey Currents, John.
Thank you, Sylvia.
Now, give us some perspective here. 21,000 voter registrations on hold, 17,000 of them since January. It sounds like a lot, but is this typical?
Well, no, it's not typical. It hasn't been typical, at least for the period we're in. We're more than a year out from the general election, so this is a time when people aren't focused on the election campaigns, and so registration levels are probably relatively low. As you mentioned, there were, as of the end of last week, about 21,500 people whose registrations are on hold. The kind of term of art is suspense, and about 17,300 of those are because of this new law that requires new voters, when they go to register, they have to provide a passport, a birth certificate, or some other paper documenting their U.S. citizenship to be able to register. And so what's happening is that they're filling out forms, largely at driver's license offices, and they're submitting the forms. The state is taking the forms and adding their names into its database, but they're not technically officially registered until they provide the proof of their U.S. citizenship.
Now, do driver's license offices, do the employees there typically ask people for their proof of citizenship?
Well, they if you are getting a new license, they have, because you are required to do the same thing to get a new license. For license renewals, they mention this in the mix, but they don't. They have not heretofore been asking you specifically if you have your documents to turn them over. If you have them with, and so what's happening has been happening is that most people who go to renew their licenses don't bring their documents because they don't need them, and they are leaving with information that's saying if you've filled out the registration form, you also have this additional step to take. The Department of Revenue, which runs the driver's license office, says it is changing its protocol a little bit, so that is one of the questions they ask, so that if you do happen to have your documents with you, just by chance and you're renewing a license, they will take those and scan them and try to deal with them. But when I talked to Nick Jordan earlier this month, he made the point that from their perspective, they're willing to help as much as possible, but their job is to process people for driver's license.
Right, and Nick Jordan is the director of the Department of Revenue.
Right. Secretary of Revenue.
Now, when people do submit, let's say they didn't bring their birth certificate or naturalization papers to the driver's license office, they're given a paper at least saying that they need to. Where do they then submit them to?
Bring them in, or they can email a picture even, or fax them into the local election office in their county. And what's clearly happening is that many of them are not doing that, and so the county officials are sending them notices, usually mailings, although Johnson County is doing once a month robocalls now. And they're still getting a relatively low take-up on that.
And I suppose the big question, which you can't necessarily answer, is why aren't they doing that? Why not just follow up and submit your proof of citizenship?
Well, there are obviously a very, very small handful of people, because I've talked to one, who are offended by this and don't think they should have to. But that's probably only a handful of people. There are several explanations out there. The Secretary of State's argument is that under a federal law, states are required to allow people to register to vote at driver's license offices. And he and other people, and they will argue about whether this was a good step or a bad step, but what they say is that catches a lot of people who weren't really interested in voting, but they're asked if they want to register, and they go, you know, it's one of those things where you're in a crowded room and you know, you go, yeah, sure, whatever, and you fill out the form. And then they really aren't that interested in voting, so they never follow up. Their election officials are concerned that these are folks who do eventually want to vote, but they're busy, they're working, you know, they're not thinking about the election. So, you know, that becomes something they can take care of later and later and later. And then they kind of worry that all of a sudden thousands of people will. The voter registration deadline is 3 weeks before the election, so they're worried that come late June or early July, thousands of people who've been getting these notices will say, oh my, I have to take care of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, suddenly.
That's right before the primary then in August and the November elections, 2014.
So the debate is whether the state has simply created a pretty significant list of people whose registrations are in suspense and is going to basically have to live with that because these folks aren't going to do much about it because they're not interested in voting. Or the alternative theory is that this is an administrative issue that is going to hit in a wave, you know, if these folks are interested in the primary right before the primary, or more likely if they're interested in the general election, because what we found was that more than half of them are unaffiliated.
Right. I wanted to ask you that because you've looked at the data on whose voter registration has been suspended.
Yes. Yes. And what I saw when we did the computer analysis was that 57% of the people whose registrations were on hold were unaffiliated. And that's out of proportion to their numbers in terms of registered voters. About 30% of Kansas voters have claimed no party affiliation. And as I said, the figure for those in this pool of people with registrations on hold is about 57%. And that is kind of in line with the thinking that these folks are more casual registrants. Certainly, if you're a partisan and you're driven by interest in a particular candidate, the thinking is you'd be more likely to follow through. Although, as I said, there are probably a few folks who are opposed to the law who are just angry they have to do it.
Right. Well, we're going to be following this reporting that you're doing. John Hanna is a political writer for the AP in Topeka. Thanks so much for joining us on KC Currents.
In recent weeks, states like Colorado, California, and Oregon have been hit hard by advertising campaigns designed to let people know about their state-created health marketplaces, which go live October 1st. They're a central part of the Affordable Care Act.
At Connect for Health Colorado, you can shop, compare, pick, and purchase the health plan that's right for you.
Pronto, los californianos le darán la bienvenida a un nuevo mercado de seguros.
Want to get the best care that a state can get. Long live Oregonians.
Long live Oregonians. But information about Missouri's health marketplace has been hard to find. And that's not just because the state decided not to set one up on its own. Just like in most states, Missouri's health marketplace will be created by the federal government. But Missouri has gone far beyond most other states to reject a marketplace. This has left Affordable Care Act supporters scrambling to get the word out and try to make the federal health program work. KC Current's Alex Smith has the story.
So let's say someone's canvassing a neighborhood or someone's at a health fair and someone comes up to the booth.
10 days before the start of the health marketplace enrollment, members of Kansas City, Missouri nonprofits are gathered in the downtown office of the Mid-America Regional Council. They compare notes on how to negotiate the complex rules set up for the health marketplace in Missouri. Melissa Robinson is president and CEO of the Black Healthcare Coalition. She says this is an unusual situation, nonprofits turning to each other for help without the assistance of state government.
This is a very interesting dynamic for the Black Healthcare Coalition, somewhat unprecedented. It's an interesting situation where you just have to depend on the feds for everything. Typically, you can go to the state level and kind of work some things out and try to figure out and work together, but this has been interesting for us.
When President Obama signed the Affordable Care Act in 2010, a lot of people working for healthcare nonprofits in Kansas City were optimistic. It seemed to promise easier access to insurance and financial assistance for those who couldn't afford it. But as Missouri House Speaker Tim Jones explains, it hasn't been so popular with Missouri voters.
Missourians have spoken out very clearly and plainly that they oppose Obamacare.
In August of 2010, voters overwhelmingly passed Proposition C, which rejected key parts of the Affordable Care Act. The state ended up returning a grant of $21 million provided by the Department of Health and Human Services to set up a health exchange. Ryan Barker of the Missouri Foundation for Health says instead of $21
million, Missouri only received about $1.8 million.
That money went to two groups that will fund navigators in Missouri. Navigators are people trained to teach the public how to use the federally created health marketplace. Barker says that $1.8 million is
nowhere near enough money to help all of the consumers that are going to need help understanding what is this marketplace, how do I navigate it, how do I figure out my options.
The federal government has since come forward with more funding for awareness, about $3 million from the Health Resources and Services Administration, and Missouri will split $12 million with several other states. But funding problems have been just the start of the trouble for health marketplace supporters in Missouri. Last year, voters overwhelmingly passed another ballot measure related to the Affordable Care Act. The summary of Proposition E stated that it forbid the governor or any state agency from setting up or running a state health exchange. But if you read the full text of the bill, Proposition E actually did a lot more. Beyond just rejecting a state health exchange, Prop E prohibited state employees from doing any training or outreach for the federal exchange as well. And as Andrea Ruth from the Missouri Health Advocacy Alliance explains, Prop E has teeth.
A citizen or a legislator can file a lawsuit against a state agency or a state employee if they think they're violating the law. So if I happen to think that some bureaucrat in Jefferson City is helping the federal government set up an exchange, I could sue them.
While Prop E's prohibitions have been lessened a bit by more recent legislation, Ruth says that fears over lawsuits have stopped most state groups from having any involvement in the health marketplace. For example, the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education had posted a web announcement to let families know the health exchanges were coming, but concerns over a lawsuit led the Missouri Department to remove the notice.
In legal terms, it has had a chilling effect.
Things got even more complicated in July of this year. That's when Missouri legislators passed a law containing state rules and licensing requirements for health marketplace navigators. The law also applies to certified application counselors, which are a kind of unfunded navigator for nonprofits. Critics of the law pointed out that navigators already needed to be licensed by the federal government. And Andrea Ruth says rules provided by the state conflict with federal rules. According to the state law,
navigators cannot discuss the options outside the marketplace.
But the federal law says
you need to tell people there are other options for them. It's not just the exchange or the marketplace.
And there's another wrinkle for the Affordable Care Act in Missouri. The national plan offers health insurance subsidies for people and families whose income is between 100 and 400% of poverty. People living below that income level are supposed to be covered by expansions in state Medicaid programs. The federal government has offered to pay 100% of the first 3 years of expansion, gradually reducing funding after that. But so far, Missouri has chosen not to expand Medicaid. Ryan Barker says that spells trouble for over 200,000 low-income Missourians who don't have insurance.
They can go to the exchange, but they can't get tax credits or subsidies. So they would be paying full price. We don't think that is a reasonable option for them. They probably are not going to be able to afford that. And without Medicaid expansion, there really is nothing in terms of insurance coverage for those individuals.
Critics of Missouri's health care laws say they're purposely complicating the health marketplace to derail the federal program. But Republican House Speaker Tim Jones doesn't see it that way.
As representatives of the state of Missouri, we're simply following the wish of all Missourians.
Earlier this week, on a conference call, Republican Lieutenant Governor Peter Kinder expressed concerns over the effects the Affordable Care Act was having on businesses. He encouraged Missourians to not use the health marketplace.
This law prescribes a one-size-fits-all plan for all of us. I would hope there would be a lot of active resistance to the implementation of this law and would say that there needs to be. So if you can, yes, resist signing up.
While the state is still considering Medicaid expansion, many Republicans like Speaker Jones believe it's too expensive.
As we look at how much government we should expand under the Obamacare options, we need to decide how much more of our budget do we want to put towards that.
Please join me in welcoming the 21st Secretary of the United States Department of Health and Social Services and former Kansas Governor Kathleen Sebelius.
Despite the pushback, Affordable Care Act supporters continue to press on. Last Saturday, Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius spoke at a conference of state government employees at the Westin Crown Center Hotel.
Although One Size Fits All might be a classic Frank Zappa album, it's really not the way we're approaching this expansion. We are having very...
She urged states to expand their Medicaid programs and embrace health marketplaces.
And I can tell you, if the deal that currently is on the table for states around the country to expand Medicaid, mostly on the federal dime, was offered to me when I was governor of the state of Kansas, I would have jumped at the offer.
Less than a week before the start of enrollment, many nonprofit workers like the Black Healthcare Coalition's Melissa Robinson are busy but hopeful.
We're optimistic, but we are in anticipation that there will be some bumps and maybe some hiccups, and so you hope for the best and you prepare for the worst.
Health Marketplace enrollment is scheduled to begin on October 1st. For Casey Currents, I'm Alex Smith.
Just after the break, we'll be taking your questions and comments about health marketplaces in both Missouri and Kansas, where the situation has been a little different. Are you considering shopping for insurance in one of these marketplaces? Call us at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or comment on KCUR's Facebook page. This is Casey Currents. Welcome back to Casey Currents. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross. Whether or not you agree with the Affordable Care Act politically, you might still be wondering what your health insurance options will be under this new law, particularly if you don't get insurance from your employer. Do you or a family member plan on using these marketplaces? If you're still trying to figure out how this whole system is going to work, call us with your questions, 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or you can go to our Facebook page. And here to answer some of those questions today are Sandy Prager, the Insurance Commissioner of Kansas. She's joining us from KPR Studios in Lawrence. Thanks for being here.
You're welcome, Sylvia. Thank you for inviting me.
And in studio is Jessica Hembry of the Healthcare Foundation of Greater Kansas City. Welcome.
Good morning.
It's a really busy time for the two of you, I gather, so thanks for making the time to be here. Sandy Prager, how does the situation in Kansas compare to that in Missouri? We just heard a story about the difficulty that people are having getting the message out, particularly because state officials can't be involved. What's the situation in Kansas?
Well, Kansas, as Missouri, will be have a federal exchange, not a state-based exchange, as your intro pointed out with Colorado and Oregon and California and some of the other states that are doing their own. But we don't have a law that restricts our ability to at least assist consumers, and we have been actively doing outreach meetings across the state. Doing radio and TV interviews and then conducting these town hall meetings. And we've had a lot of interest. And there is a lot of confusion. I think it's important for people to get informed about the law and the potential benefit to them. We also have a new dedicated website at our department called insureks.org, and it has a lot of information that kind of helps people walk through the concept of enrolling online without actually performing the enrollment process.
And are there any other restrictions in Kansas, like on the way people are licensed to help people navigate these marketplaces?
The Navigator program, again, is run by the federal government in federal exchange states, but we've been actively involved in making sure we're going to have appropriate oversight. The agent community we already regulate, and we've indicated to folks that if a person who's designated as a navigator crosses over the line and starts making a recommendation of one plan versus another, then that's engaging in the selling of insurance, and you have to be a licensed agent to do that. So we're going to monitor those activities closely. I know there's concern that people are going to have access to very sensitive personal information, and those agents are used to dealing with that. Navigators not as much, so they've been cautioned repeatedly during their training program that they are not to write anything down, they are not to keep anything, they are to avoid as much as possible even looking at some of that sensitive information. So there's, I think a legitimate concern, and we're taking it very seriously, and I know the training programs for these navigators is taking it very seriously.
Well, here in studio, Jessica Hembry of the Healthcare Foundation of Greater Kansas City, you're working in both Kansas and Missouri. I wonder, first of all, when we were talking about this months ago, we were saying exchanges, but now the term that people are using is marketplace. I wonder, what's the difference here?
It's essentially still the same platform, but there's just been a sense that some people, when you hear exchange, think of bartering, think of heading down to the grocery store. And marketplace is really a more accurate description for what we're working with here. And the marketplace is what it sounds like. It's just a new way to shop for something. It's a new way to shop for health insurance products.
And Jessica, these new marketplaces are supposed to make it easier to buy insurance. So what do they look like? I mean, it's not a store you can walk into, right?
It's not a physical store. It's actually a website. Some people compare it to an Expedia or a Travelocity or other website like that. It's going to be a way to make apples-to-apples comparisons between different private health insurance plans. So right now, if you go out and try to shop for a plan, it's really hard to get a handle on what you're looking for and how plans differ. And what the marketplace will do is set up sort of a specific marketplace, so it's a lot easier to tell what you're looking at and make price comparisons between different insurance options.
And Commissioner Sandy Prager, you mentioned the navigators. Can you explain a little bit about who these people are and how you contact them?
Right. The navigators are working through three different organizations that are going to do the training and then oversee their activities. And you'll be able to go to our department online and get a list of the organizations. So, for example, the largest one in Kansas is the Kansas Association for the Medically Underserved. That's the consortium of of clinics that help people that don't have health insurance, and those clinics across the state will have access to these special trained, in most cases, volunteers that can assist people in the sign-up process. Libraries across the state are also going to be a source of information about how to access the website. You don't have to use a navigator. You can go to the website directly as an individual. So, and again, libraries are outreach that is done through the extension agents in each of our counties. Those folks will have information that can assist people in getting what they need to know about the sign up process. You know, then on our department website, again, the insureks.org, we have a little estimator that someone can key in their zip code, their county, and their just some basic insurance income information, and find out if they're eligible for a tax credit and how much that tax credit might be. And that's information that they can get through our department before even going to the marketplace.
Right. Jessica, you wanted to add something?
Oh, I was just going to reinforce that you don't have to go through a navigator or any kind of in-person assistance to sign up for the marketplace. There's so many different ways to access this marketplace, one of them being healthcare.gov, one of them being a call center that the federal government has established. It's 1-800-318-2596, and it's available 24/7, 365 days a year. And then if you feel like you want to talk to someone one-on-one and get any additional help beyond what's available on the website or through the call center, you can access a navigator or an agent or broker who can help you.
And we have a call here from Terry in Kansas City North. Hi, Terry.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing good. I heard your request for anybody who's experienced the exchanges so far, and a lady friend and I have been exploring the options she's got on the exchanges, and we've been impressed. She's 62 and has been unable to buy insurance to date because of pre-existing conditions, and we went to a seminar the other night in Liberty put on by an independent insurance broker, and we learned a lot. We've learned the options or the availability of the various types of insurance available to her, and we're impressed. We're looking forward to getting her enrolled in October.
So there are some options available for her now that weren't previously?
Indeed. She had tried to get insurance from various private providers. She's retired now at 62, unable to get on the Medicare, of course. And she was just, you know, living on basically if she got sick. We've explored her options through the new ACA, and we've been impressed.
Well, thank
you. She's finally going to be able to get some insurance.
Yeah, thanks for calling, Terry. Jessica, how many plans now are available? There's a lot of information now about these plans that just became available, and I wonder how many are in Missouri?
In the state of Missouri, we think there's going to be about 17 health plans available for folks to choose from. The prices are still being released. They've released limited information on prices, and we know, for example, for a family of four making about $50,000 a year, once they get on the marketplace and shop for eligible health plans, if they choose a mid-range plan and take advantage of the tax credits that are available to them through the marketplace, their monthly premium will be approximately $280, which is a fairly affordable amount compared to what it would be off the marketplace and in the current system we have.
What, do you have information for a single person?
For a single person, I have information for a single person who's 27 years old, because there is still going to be some age rating in the marketplace. Someone who's 27 would be able to access a premium for about $87 a month. So that's comparable to a cell phone plan. And that protects you, of course, from any catastrophic medical illnesses that you might have and covers preventive visits. So for the cost of a cell phone plan, someone who's under the age of 30 can, with an income of about $25,000, can access health insurance through the marketplace.
You're listening to Casey Currents on KCUR 89.3 FM. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross. We're talking about the health insurance marketplaces that are being rolled out October 1st as part of Obamacare. With us are Jessica Hebrie of the Healthcare Foundation of Greater Kansas City and Kansas Insurance Commissioner Sandy Prager. Sandy Prager, are you? How does this compare in Kansas, these costs for maybe similar family and single person?
You know, I think what we're seeing in Kansas is that estimates have come in lower than anticipated. I think across the country, the estimates on average are about 16% lower than what had originally been put out there by the Congressional Budget Office. So I think that's good news. We have 30-some plans, different plans at different levels of coverage, and I think people will have sufficient choice. We might have had more plans had we done a state exchange, but I think in subsequent years we may have a few more plans want to join in. But there's still sufficient number of choices for individuals at varying cost-sharing levels, and I think people are going to be very pleasantly surprised, I think, at the amount of tax credit perhaps that they're going to be eligible for, and then the monthly premium.
Now, do you have that information for like a family of four making $50,000 for the state of Kansas?
I think it's about $260 a month. I don't have the numbers right in front of me. So we have, I think our experience, I don't want to be bragging based on Kansas versus Missouri. I think our experience in Kansas is that the rates will be a little bit less than what has been published for Missouri. But they're in both states, it's pretty comparable.
Is that because more companies, there's more plans being offered?
No, I think probably it relates more to the cost of health care and the historic experience of healthcare in the states, and it also may have something to do with income distribution. But I think it's probably more just relates to the historic cost of healthcare in the two states.
And we should talk about now who is eligible for subsidies or credits on the cost of these plans. Sandy Prager.
Sure. From 100% to 400% of the federal poverty level, folks will be eligible for a tax credit, and it's applied immediately to the premium. So you're never going to pay the full amount of premium if you're eligible for the tax credit. If you choose to take it, you can delay and have it apply at the end of the year when you file your tax form. There's some additional assistance, out-of-pocket assistance for people under 250% of the federal poverty level to help them with out-of-pocket copay and deductible expenses. The unfortunate thing, and this is for both Kansas and Missouri, we have very low Medicaid eligibility rates in both of our states, and neither state took advantage of the Medicaid expansion. So we're going to have folks that won't make enough to qualify for the tax assistance because they are below 100% of the federal poverty level. But in Kansas, the eligibility for Medicaid, if you're an adult with children, there's no Medicaid eligibility for childless adults. It's 32% of the federal poverty level. And I think in Missouri, it's around 19 or 20. Jessica may know.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah. So those folks, but childless adults under 100% of the federal poverty level, there's going to be no financial assistance for them. And that's really we're already hearing people that are calling in to find out about what they potentially might be eligible for. We're already hearing some concern about that because it's hard to tell someone they're too poor to qualify for a subsidy.
We have a call here, Ken in Lee's Summit. Hi, Ken.
Hello. I'm an agent, an health insurance agent for 30 years. I'm totally in favor of this. Even though we're going to lose a large amount of commissions over the years, it's better for the nation. And because I'm a licensed agent and we represent all the large insurers, we've had early access to the websites that are going live October 1st. I buy my own insurance on the private market. It was cheaper than what the employers offered here, which will remain nameless. I pay $238 currently. When I went onto the website because that we have early access to, it dropped to $103 for the identical plan for me. So, And if I can get an even better plan for $138 instead of a $5,000 deductible and $40 office visit, I can get a $1,500 deductible and $20 office visits if I want to pay $138.
Now,
so that's straight from the horse's mouth. Anybody that's fearful that they're going to be paying much more or get burned by this or get hurt by this simply doesn't know what they're talking about.
Now, Ken, now professionally, I mean, you mentioned you're a little bit, your profession is a little threatened by having these navigators and all these efforts to have people use these exchanges, which supposedly makes it easier to buy insurance, so maybe they won't need to use you as much.
That's correct. That's one of the main points that I'm making. I, in effect, am going to be giving up personally approximately $50,000 in annual income. However, it's better for the nation, so I'm willing to take that sacrifice. I'm willing to personally give in like a republic and a democracy should.
Are you going to be looking for a new line of business?
Office. Pardon me?
Are you going to be looking for a new line of business?
Well, we already have, you know, just, of course. There still will be people and groups that buy through our agency, and however, we sell a lot of other things besides just health insurance.
I see.
Yes, don't worry, I will survive, but it's better for the nation, it's better for everybody, and I was really repulsed by what the Republican legislators did in both states, Missouri and Kansas, and keeping poor people out and doing what they did with Medicaid was really a bad thing to do.
Right. Well, let me have the commissioner and Jessica Hembree here to respond to your call. Thanks.
Yeah. God bless you, Ken. That's a wonderful commentary. You know, there are going to be more people eligible for insurance. The gentleman that called in earlier who has a friend at age 62 who's been denied coverage because of a pre-existing condition, that won't exist anymore. So we are going to have more people eligible and able to buy coverage. And I think they're still going to want to use somebody like Ken to assist them. You know, an agent does more than just sell a policy. They help somebody manage the claims process. They really provide an ongoing service. So I think there's still going to be a lot of room for someone, especially someone with the compassion that Ken has for his customers.
Jessica Hembree.
I was just going to reinforce, I mean, I think both callers struck a chord around how pleasantly surprised they've been with the options that they're finding on the marketplace. And I would absolutely encourage people to check it out. I think one thing that's worth considering is just how high up into the income brackets that marketplace's eligibility goes. Sandy mentioned that it's 400% of the federal poverty level. And putting that number into context for a family of four, mom, dad, a couple kids, folks all the way up to $94,200 in annual family income might qualify for some sort of tax credit on the marketplace. So check it out if you're currently uninsured or if you have insurance that you're not happy with or if you're currently on the individual market. It's definitely worth taking a look at.
Now, I hear from some people that, you know, that you have to enroll by January 1st, and if you don't, you pay a fine. And I understand that fine is going to be $95 or 1% of your income if it'll be less than $95. Why not just pay the fine if you're young and healthy and feel like you maybe don't need insurance? I mean, a lot of people may end up doing that.
Well,
Jessica.
So the healthcare reform has set up some carrots and some sticks. I'd say one of the carrots is definitely the availability of these tax credits on the marketplace that essentially you can end up with health insurance at the end of the day that you're not paying a ton for out of pocket. And one of the sticks is certainly the tax penalty that will take effect in tax year 2014. And while that is 95% at the outset, that penalty goes up over time. So over time, there's going to be more and more incentive for folks who are currently uninsured, even those who are young and might consider themselves to be invincible. There's going to be more and more incentive for them to take a look at the marketplace and make sure that they have qualified health insurance.
We have a call from William in Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, William.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. How are you?
You know, I have a question for you. I am legally disabled, so I do receive Medicare and Medicaid, and I am fortunate for that. My question is twofold. Number one, do I have to do anything besides Medicare and Medicaid? Do I have to sign up for anything? I think I do not have to do anything, but I want to make sure. And number two, neither one of them offer dental insurance. And my question is, given that I do not have that, is there any way that I can sign up for something on Monday that will allow me to have dental insurance?
And Sandy Prager, do you have an answer? I guess he's in Missouri. William is in Missouri, so maybe I should ask
Jessica.
Right.
Well, dental.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Dental insurance is not covered, and there is no need for someone who's currently on Medicare through disability to do anything. Medicare does not change, except for a few additional benefits that were added as a part of the Affordable Care Act. But people on Medicare don't have to do anything. The open enrollment period starts the middle of October for Medicare, just as it always does. People can look at their prescription drug plans and make changes. They can make changes to their supplemental plans if they want. But the Medicare sign-up program and everything about it remains the same.
Jessica Hembree, there's been particular concern that in low-income communities, people might not be getting the information they need to use these marketplaces, particularly if they don't have access to computers or the internet. What's being done to reach out to people?
There's quite a bit going on. The Healthcare Foundation of Greater Kansas City is playing a significant role in the area in just making sure that we get the right information to the right folks. So those who are currently uninsured in the Kansas City area, which we estimate to be about 200,000 people in Greater Kansas City, we're making sure we get to them with mail, with phone calls, with information from trusted nonprofit organizations in the Kansas City area.
And unfortunately, we're about to end our segment, but Sandy Prager, what happens if the Affordable Care Act gets defunded or repealed?
That's not going to happen. It won't. I don't think either of those things will happen. The defunding part of it, I think it'd be very difficult for Congress to do that. And as long as President Obama is president, and that's through 2016, he is not going to sign any legislation that attempts to repeal this law. And if we don't do this, then the problem will still exist. We as a nation need to come to grips with everyone having access to healthcare services, and we're doing it by building on a private marketplace.
Well, I want to thank you both for joining us. Sandy Prager is the insurance commissioner in Kansas. Thanks so much for your time.
You bet. Thank you.
And Jessica Hembree is with the Healthcare Foundation of Greater Kansas City. Thanks.
You bet.
We do have a link to a subsidy calculator on our website on the story about Missouri's health marketplace. Check it out. Coming up after the break, three teenage brothers from St. Joseph who love their parents and punk music. This is Casey Currents. This is Casey Currents. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross. We're going to hear now from a family band, but they're a far cry from the Carter family or the Jackson Five. Three brothers from St. Joseph are about to release their second EP and tour Europe. But as Casey Currents' Matthew Long Middleton discovered, recognition at home has been harder to come by.
Heading north along I-29 out of Kansas City, there's a stretch of road rather indistinguishable from the previous stretch of road. But as you come to a bend in the Missouri River, St. Joseph emerges from the horizon. Like many smaller American cities, the downtown is filled with abandoned and repurposed buildings, making the city look like a person in oversized shoes. And coming from this city are three maverick brothers, and they make music like this.
Check.
Hello. Check. Hello. Check.
When they came into the studio for our interview late one night, I was surprised by how small the brothers were. Considering their deep vocals and charging sounds, I'd suspected they'd be bigger. They sat down to the mics, one dressed in a flannel button-down, the youngest in a Star Wars t-shirt, and the other in a torn, faded denim vest.
My name's Darian, and I play guitar and lead vocals in Radke.
My name is Isaiah Radke. I play the bass and I lay down the background vocals.
I'm Solomon Yaki. I play drums.
They formed the band 3 years ago when Saul was just 13, Isaiah 15, and Dee 17. Besides their age, the other remarkable thing about them as a punk band is how often they're together with their parents.
All the time. We have a better relationship with our parents and with each other than a lot of people have with their parents or, their siblings. So whatever they did it right. I don't remember what they did, but whatever it was. I wasn't taking notes. I wish I was taking notes.
One of the things their parents did was share music. Their father, Matt Radke, had a library full of music, like Van Halen, the Pixies, the Ramones, and others. Another one of the things their parents did was homeschool the brothers. Isaiah and Dee remember the 1 year they actually spent in school.
I wanted out of there, though, because I wasn't into... I don't know, just the kids just didn't get me. They didn't get the music we dug, and they just didn't get it, so we just got out of there.
They get you all in trouble for no reason. For some reason, you get in trouble because of their stupid, you know, decisions.
Entire classrooms getting in trouble for one kid. Yeah. That's, like, something so I stupid. Wouldn't take, so I was out of there.
They returned home for their studies and focused on their passion, music. In 2010, their father sent a demo to a club in Merriam. There was a hole to open for the long-established ska-punk band Fishbone, and for some reason, they got the gig.
We had no business playing that show.
We were not supposed to play that, but we did, and it gave us a really good head start. They didn't ask us if we had played a show before. Yeah. They didn't ask us how old we were. Mm-hmm. So we just got to get in, play our set. Everyone dug it. And then, you know, then you can say, hey, we opened up for Fishbone. So adult, like 21 plus clubs can say, hey, they're a real band. They have a half hour set. They can play this place. And they opened for a real band.
Slowly, Radke gained recognition regionally.
We get such great shows in KC and Lawrence.
Just like walking on the streets, we get noticed.
Yeah, it's
by people. It's
so
really
fun.
It's a cool feeling.
In the last 3 years, they played at South by Southwest, the Afropunk Festival in New York, been written up in the New York Times, and toured to London.
They know our songs there. It's kind of nuts. Like, I can't wait to go back.
Before we even get there, they know our songs.
Yeah, it was crazy. Like, we got, because some of our EP had been getting radio play, so, you know, at the Download Fest, people were up front and, like, mouthing words to the songs, and while you're playing, you're like, what?
Yeah,
and
you know, and you start a song, and tears start, you know, going, it's like, wow, that's crazy.
Despite their growing recognition over the past 3 years, as three black teens playing punk rock, Isaiah says they still have to overcome audience expectations.
I mean, I get a lot of people who are like, you know, how are you guys not like rap group? You know, like how did you do that? Like, how are you playing punk rock? It's like, okay, one, we listen to it. Two, we're doing it. And three, you know, just because we're black doesn't mean we have to rap.
Exactly. It's ridiculous. Like some people have actually thought that we were a rap band just from looking at the cover of one of our earlier demos.
This place called Hammerjacks, we sent our picture and demo there, and they're like, oh, we don't book rap groups. And it's like,
oh, my goodness. Just
all right, we'll take our rap to another rock club.
And even though they're playing larger gigs, in St. Joseph, the crowds have still been hard to come by.
We play a headlining gig there on a Friday night, like, 15 people, maybe. Maybe I'm being generous.
That's generous.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, if we can't draw here in our hometown, like, that just says something about the scene to me. It, like, that's what it is. Like, there's a lot of bands that play all the time to no one all the time, and it's just...
How do you guys, like, gear up for something like that?
Just do public practice, you know?
Yeah, you just pretend that there are a lot of people out there.
Yeah, pretend or just have a good time anyways, you know? I mean, we've played in front of, like, 11 people that are really enthusiastic, and that's fun, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, it's a good time. But if you're playing your hometown for, like, the seventh time after accomplishing so many things and no one cares, it's like, all right, well, I'm done then.
But their discouragement about hometown support isn't stopping them from making music. Their new EP, Devil Fruit, comes out in October, and their single, Romance Dawn, is getting radio play. Isaiah says the inspiration for the single came to him while sitting at a Japanese restaurant with the band's lawyer.
I started hearing Dan out, like in my head, like, hey, hey, there's, I'm like, what's this? And so I hear it, then I get on my phone, I'm like on my Evernote, I'm like, and I get it recorded. And then it just came in my head like that. And then I tell Dee and Saul, I'm like, I've got a new song idea. It's going to be a single. And they're like, whatever. So I mouth it into the microphone. Then they just perfectly got this jam to it. And it just worked. Chorus was hard to do.
Chorus was hard.
Took a while to figure that out, but
how so? Can you? I've never made music before.
Like, you know, sometimes you start off and you're like, "Hey, this chorus is awesome and really catchy. Let's write a verse around it." But this was started with a verse that was really catchy, so we had to have an even better chorus. So it was really tough. A lot of chorus ideas went through.
Yeah, went through so many.
I think we wrote our best song yet.
Yeah.
And it just popped into your head because you weren't listening to your lawyer.
Yeah, pretty much.
Other songs on their EP are inspired by their love of anime, the Japanese cartoons that often feature fantastical and sci-fi worlds disparate from ours. In so many ways, Radke goes against the grain of what you'd expect from a punk rock band. They aren't rebelling against political, social, or economic establishments, as their predecessors did. They don't even rail against their parents, as teenagers typically do. In fact, they spend almost every moment with them. And perhaps that's what's so refreshing about their sound, particularly in a genre that has fallen from mainstream attention. Despite singing illusions about cartoon worlds, they take their profession very seriously.
For live shows, we like to keep really high energy, like, but we don't like to fake it. Like, whatever you're feeling, like, do it. Be really sincere about it. Don't lie, you know. Put on a good show, because I feel like play good music, put on a good show, because why would you go see a live band if they're not going to, you know, put on a show for them, you know, hurt yourself, you know, do something.
Yeah.
And even with all their success, it's still important for them to play for their hometown. Saul, Isaiah, and Dee were all anxious to see what their upcoming show in St. Joseph would be like.
Well, the Rendezvous is a cool club, and hopefully the show is very well packed, because it's about time in our hometown. All the controversy, all of the hate, all of the love should get a good crowd.
That Friday in St. Joseph at the Rendezvous, the room was filled and many others milled about the bar. One audience member, Don Ashley, says he discovered the band just a year ago.
If you've never heard of Radke before, you should probably get off your ass and start doing something with your life, like listening to good music. I have a feeling they're going to be the next big thing right now. And not only rock and roll music, but punk rock music too, which is, you haven't seen a lot of good, like, honest bands come out of it. So,
as they gear up for a European and West Coast tour, they say they're not afraid to burn out. They've already developed a taste for touring.
Well, we just loved it. Like, a lot of bands don't make it through the first week. And that's how you can see, like, if they're going to be able to be a band or not. But, like, we really dug it. Like,
I wanted to keep going. I didn't want to go home.
Yeah, I just want to keep on doing it. You know, just play a show every day, meet people, get better. You know, you feel yourself getting better. It's a good feeling.
It seems fitting that a band obsessed with watching anime and sci-fi would dream of a life on the road, a world very different from ours, where you can go from city to city like a wandering samurai, slaying the audience with song. For Casey Currents, I'm Matthew Law Middleton.
Photos of Radke performing that last show in St. Joseph on our website, kcur.org. That's it for Casey Currents today. Our live broadcast will be every Thursday morning from now on. If you missed part of the show or want to hear it again or subscribe to the podcast, check out our page at kcur.org. You can contact us at kccurrents@kcur.org or on Twitter at kccurrents. Central Standard is back tomorrow with the history of Kansas City's fire department. And up next on Up to Date, our very own Chuck Haddocks of the Fish Fry will be talking about his new book on Charlie Parker. Today's KC Currents was produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Suzanne Hogan, Alex Smith, and Susan Wilson. Our interns are Esther Honig, Monica Sandretsky, Ross Steinmetz, and Sydney Llewellyn. Theme music is by Approach. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross, and this is KCUR.